Hello and welcome to QuadAchievers Markets Uncut podcast, your weekly insight into the topics and trends that we have been exploring for you here at QuadAchievers. Remember, so you don't miss future episodes, be sure to hit the follow button on whichever streaming platform you are listening on, or by following hashtag QCWeeklyComment on LinkedIn. I'm your host, Andrew Cartwright, investment manager based out of our Birmingham office. And this week, I'm delighted to be joined by Richard Carter, our head of fixed interest research, and Maurizio Carilli, our oil and mining sector equity analyst. Welcome, Richard and Maurizio. So, Richard, last week, you and Edison Shahini were discussing bond yields in the UK, which had been rising sharply in recent weeks. Now, in part, that was due to global factors, but it was also as a result of recent data highlighting weak economic growth in the UK and core inflation remaining stubbornly high. There have been growing concerns that just a few months after the new Labour government's autumn budget statement, that the Chancellor might need to review their fiscal stance. And as a result, UK government borrowing costs reached a 16-year high and longer dated bond issues were notably impacted, with 30-year gilt yields reaching their highest level since the late 1990s. Sterling also weakened significantly against the US dollar. So with concerns over the prospect of stagflation and pressure mounting on the government, last week was a busy and important one in terms of UK economic updates, and most notably, the latest inflation and UK GDP reports were released. Richard, could you talk us through the main points of those updates and the market reaction? And with the Bank of England due to meet early in February to set interest rates, what do you think the implications might be for the outcome of that meeting?
Yeah, that's right, Andy. I mean, it's really, as you said, really been quite a lot of turmoil in bond markets, particularly in gilts to start the year. And going into the week, there was a sense of, you know, we're not quite in a crisis here in gilt markets, but if we got a really bad inflation print, perhaps, you know, that might potentially tip us a little bit over the edge and pile even more pressure on the Chancellor and the government, given the fallout from the budget. It's not exactly been great, although, as you say, a lot of it down to global factors. So it was with, I think, some relief that we got better than expected inflation numbers last week. And actually, they were quite substantially better than the market was hoping for. And it was really on the sort of core CPI front, you know, not just the headline numbers, which can be quite volatile, but the core CPI, you know, that ticked down to 3.2%. And service inflation, which has been a problem in the UK for some time now, and caused a lot of worry for the Bank of England, that also fell quite sharply from 5% to 4.4%. So that was good. One slight fly in the ointment, I'd have to say, is that there are always in inflation reports some, you know, underlying volatile items. One of those is airfares, and they did record quite a big drop, which had a large impact on numbers. So with that, there might be some sort of give back on that in the next month's inflation report. But overall, pretty happy with that. And it certainly caused a sharp rally in gilt markets afterwards. And then on the back of that, you had UK GDP numbers, as you said. They were pretty soft. Let's be honest, that's not good as far as the government's you know, fiscal issues are concerned. And we all know that, you know, the UK's problem of getting growth has not been solved. But it does mean potentially that the Bank of England is now, with stagnant growth and sort of slightly less worrying inflation, in a position to cut interest rates, hopefully, at the next meeting. So next meeting's early February the 6th, I think, and it looks like we could be getting a 25 basis point cut at that one. So that'd be good news for the government, and they'll be hoping there'll be more to follow.
Thank you, Richard. And just to round up the events of last week, we also had sort of various other reports released which related to US inflation, employment. We had UK retail sales figures out and Chinese Q4 GDP. Was there anything in particular that caught your attention there? And looking ahead, we, of course, have Donald Trump's inauguration this week. So, and in addition to that, is there anything else that you'll be keeping a watching eye out for?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Trump's inauguration is this week, and what he does in terms of executive orders is going to be a big deal. It's certainly, you know, things like tariffs and energy policy are going to be very important for markets. So we'll have to wait and see what he does. I think last week, you know, as I mentioned, gilts did well. Treasuries did well, too. I mean, US Treasuries, I mean, there was a Weaker than expected US inflation numbers too, so that was good. And there were comments from sort of leading Fed officials that don't give up on the prospects of interest rate cuts this year. They still think inflation's gradually coming down, and there is scope for them to ease policy as we go on through the year. So if that happens and Trump doesn't kind of upset the apple cart, then that would be great for potentially great for bond markets, which as I said, got off to the year with quite a difficult start. Other things going on this week, we've got obviously Davos, the World Economic Forum, which is always quite funny seeing all these executives jet in from all over the world to try and solve everyone's problems, including on climate change. And we've also got the Bank of Japan meeting, and they're probably heading in an opposite direction to a lot of the central banks, because we're likely to see an interest rate hike from them this week. But as I say, the main focus very much on Trump.
Thank you, Richard. So, Maurizio, we heard earlier from Richard that whilst the headline UK inflation rate has fallen to 2.5%, which is in line with the Bank of England's target, core CPI, which whilst it was also down from 3.5% to 3.2%, it has remained stubbornly higher for quite some time. And without going into too much detail about the different measures of inflation, the key difference between headline and core CPI is that food and energy prices are stripped out of core CPI, as they tend to be more volatile and influenced by external factors. Now, a key component of energy prices is, of course, oil, and we have seen some significant movements in the oil price over the past 3 years. And the price of Brent peaked just below $130 back in March 2022, which of course, that was the start of the Ukraine war. And since then, it has steadily climbed and fell below $70 last autumn. But just over the past few weeks, there has been a sharp upturn to over $80 a barrel. Now, Maurizio, we know that the oil and other commodity prices can be very volatile, but even still, that is a fairly significant movement in what is a very short period of time. Could you give us an update on what has been driving the oil price in recent times, and in particular, that rise since the start of the year?
Yes, absolutely, Andrew. The oil price is driven by the balance between demand and supply, like every other commodity, but also by geopolitical factors. For example, when in early 2020, during the first phase of the COVID pandemic, demand for oil collapsed, the oil price fell to $27 per barrel. But when Russia invaded Ukraine in early 2022, oil price went well above $100 per barrel. A few weeks ago, at the end of December, oil price was at $73. And if any, market expectations were for a further decrease due to weaker demand from China because of the slower GDP growth there and additional oil production from OPEC, possibly as early as April this year. What has caused the spike in oil price to $81 per barrel this month has been, once again, a geopolitical factor. The US administration has introduced new sanctions against Russia aimed at further limiting its exports, like, for example, the sanctioning of 183 Russian oil-carrying vessels. Going forward, in 2025, oil price is likely to be influenced by opposing forces. On one side, weaker oil demand due to a softer global economy, combined with possible OPEC production increases, would point to an oil surplus in 2025, and therefore to a weakening of the oil price. But on the other side, if Trump introduces severe sanctions against Iran and or global economic growth surprises on the upside, oil prices may actually remain at current level or even rise further, at least temporarily.
And as expected, there is a strong correlation between the oil price and share prices of the oil majors, which are amongst the largest companies in the world. And now, whilst the mega cap US technology stocks now dominate the US equity markets, in the UK, BP and Shell are still very significant, and when combined make up nearly 10% of the entire UK equity market. Now, the share price of BP and Shell have both risen sharply on the back of that recent oil price movement, but there does seem to be mounting pressures building at BP, and it is notable that they have underperformed Shell and other peers, which include ExxonMobil and Chevron, over the past 12 months. And last week, it announced that it was going to cut 5% of its workforce to cut costs. Maurizio, could you give us a bit more insight and your thoughts as to what has been going on at BP? Could there be a blowout? And how does that compare to your current view on Shell?
Yes, Andrew. As very correctly you said, past year BP share price underperformed both Shell and most of the other oil majors. The less than ideal share price performance had been caused by weak operational results over a number of quarters, with earnings often below market expectations. And furthermore, a higher level of debt versus its peers compounded the problems. But BP share price performance has also been negatively influenced by long-standing questions about its strategy and, equally importantly, who really decide strategy within BP. These doubts started already under previous CEO Bernard Looney, who soon after his appointment in 2020 set a goal of cutting BP hydrocarbon production by 40% by 2030, mainly through asset divestments, as well as to focus significantly on renewables. When he abruptly left in September 2023, his successor, Murray Auchincloss, who was at that time BP's CFO, inherited a rather difficult situation. To compound that, BP's previous history of CEOs living under challenging circumstances, like in the case of Lord Brownie and Tony Hayward, did not help. Now, BP CEO Murray Auchincloss is going to provide a well-flagged strategy update in February. It is entirely possible that a refocused strategy will be announced, possibly with draconian cost-cutting, asset divestments, less capital expenditure in lower returns businesses, and a more modest buyback program, all in order to enhance BP profitability and reduce its debt. So, going into February, BP could be seen as an event-driven story, possibly combined with a restructuring story, and if the update will be perceived as successful by the market, it might reverse the stock market fortunes of BP. On the other side, Shell, which experienced a solid share price performance in 2024, is more a very well-executed, cash-flow-driven story, with CEO Welsa Wan laser-focused on returns. Shell 2 will provide a strategy update, albeit in March, 1 month later than BP, so additional positive surprises may come from Shell 2.
Thank you, Maurizio, and we'll certainly keep a close eye out for that BP update and then Shell, and no doubt you might have some updated thoughts following on from that. So thank you to Richard and Maurizio for those great insights, and to you all for listening. Did you enjoy our discussion on the podcast today? We love to hear from our listeners, so please review the show now wherever you're listening and share it on your socials and tag us at @CrawlToCheviot. To make sure you don't miss a future episode, tap the subscribe button. We'll be back next week. And in the meantime, head over to our website, www.quilladchiviot.com, where you can read the company market overview, as well as subscribe to our weekly comment newsletter. You can also stay up to date with our thoughts on markets, news, industry insights, and our upcoming events and webinars on our website or our social media pages. Finally, do you have any questions that you would like to ask some of our experts for our next podcast? Simply ask them via the weekly comments page on our website. We love to hear your questions. And that's it for today. So thank you again to Richard and Maurizio for your time, and to you all for listening. See you next time.